Hello, everyone, and welcome to my podcast, Body Justice. I started this podcast because I believe that all bodies are good bodies. All bodies are deserving, worthy, and all bodies are whole just as they are. In today's world, it's ever hard to embody this as our truth. My mission is to create a space to process body image, eating disorders, and relationships through a justice-oriented lens. I'm a licensed therapist in California and an eating disorder survivor myself. I know what it's like to be at war with myself and also to find peace again. Thank you for being here, and I look forward to being your host. Hello, everyone. Happy New Year. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday season, if that is something you celebrate. I want to take today to get back to the basics of body justice. So I have done this podcast now for a little over a year. Yay, so exciting. It's been such a journey and I've really loved it. This is something I do from my heart. I really don't get money from this. Maybe like a couple dollars here and there. It's not a monetary thing for me. This is part of my body justice mission to make sure that people of all backgrounds are able to access some knowledge of what it takes to recover from disordered eating and just the intersection of social justice and mental health in general. But as you know, I do focus on eating disorders because that is a topic that is near and dear to my heart as I am personally recovered. And the reason why I, you know, interject social justice so much into this work is, number one, because it's necessary. Like, you can't talk about eating disorder recovery without talking about all the systems of oppression that influence the development of eating disorders, but also because of my personal journey. So when I was in recovery, this was over a decade ago, and social justice was not a mainstream thing at all, and it was something completely left out of my treatment. And as a mixed race woman, I felt some type of way about that, right? It influenced my worldview. I grew up in a super white area. And so being mixed race, I always felt like I didn't belong. And I started detaching from my true sense of self at a pretty young age because of that, because I wanted to fit in to this ideal, right? This like white, thin ideal that was very apparent where I lived. And as I went through recovery, I developed some insights around how much this influenced my eating disorder. This was not something that was talked about in therapy or with my dietitian, like actually never even discussed it. And they were amazing, like I was still able to recover. However, it wasn't until like my own insight building around this and kind of awakening that I realized we miss so much in the world of eating disorder treatment. We miss people's intersecting identities, historically for sure, and definitely still now happens. We miss how that influences someone's body image and their desire to disconnect from their bodies, because the world isn't safe for all bodies. That's just a fact. So if the world is not safe for your body, and even just being a woman, right? Even if you're white and thin, cisgender, and have all these different levels of privileges, even being a woman is unsafe in our world at times, right? We have to think if we want to walk out at night. Most of us probably don't. If we do, we're, you know, probably looking over our shoulder, carrying pepper spray. You know, it's not safe. Our bodies are sexualized. They are objectified. And even beyond that, there's intersecting identities like age, like being heterosexual, your gender identity, your race, all these things, right? And so we're going to talk about that today. We're going to get back to the basics of body justice and why I even started this podcast. My very first episode goes over this, but it's kind of embarrassing because I hadn't been so indoctrinated into the podcasting world yet, so it's kind of cringy for me to re-listen to. So I'm going to redo it today, and it's also not on all platforms because, you know, again, newbie podcaster at the time, so didn't know how to get it out to every podcasting platform, but now I do. So that being said, let's get into some of the basics, okay? So it's no secret that there is a thin ideal in our culture, right? We hear about this quite a lot. It is everywhere. It's a major factor in influencing body image distress and distortion and disordered eating in the westernized world, and it has been for decades. It's pretty well understood at this point, but maybe it's not for all of you, right? But this is what we're going to talk about. So when you scroll through social media, or when you watch Netflix, or when you pass billboards on the highway, what kind of bodies do you see? Think really critically about that. What bodies are portrayed to you, and what ideals are represented to you? Just really think about that for a moment. Maybe close your eyes and think about last time you scrolled through TikTok or Instagram. Were there certain bodies that were deemed as more desirable? You know, in the influencers or content creators or actors or models? What body sizes, skin colors, age ranges, genders, what body types were seen as desirable? Now, in your mind, you probably have a few images maybe that popped up, and I don't want you to judge that. I just want you to be curious, right? Most likely, the person was thin, probably relatively young, you know, maybe like under 30, right? Probably had a clear gender expression. Maybe they were part of the binary ideal of being quote unquote male or female. Right? Maybe they were white or light-skinned. And this isn't to shame or judge anyone for having these images pop up when I ask you this question. This is just how we're conditioned, right? Because the reality is, and this is a term that Sonia Renee Taylor introduced me to, is we are all part of a body hierarchy. That is, there is people at the top of the hierarchy that hold the most power, right? And that is white, thin, males, cisgender, heterosexual, you know, these are the top of the ladder. And I'm not hating on white cis het men at all. We actually need white cis het men to help us do this work because they're the ones with the most power, right? But that is the reality, right? And you go lower on the hierarchy, the more intersecting identities, marginalized identities you have, okay? So that's because these ideals are represented to us, and they're way more complex than just the thin ideal. The thin ideal is absolutely real, and a lot of us grew up with the pressure, no matter, you know, what culture we're from, a lot of us grew up with the pressure to want to shrink our bodies, right? But there's also this white ideal, there's an ableist ideal, there is a gender binary ideal, a heterosexual ideal, being affluent and youthful. These are all like part of all these ideals, right? And the people at the top of the hierarchy are the closest to systemic power, right? And they choose to represent and inject certain bodies in all of our psyches as the ideal, right? This is a legacy of white supremacy and colonization, because if we can say certain bodies are bad or wrong, then we feel less bad for what we do to those bodies, right? I know this is really heavy stuff, guys, so please bear with me. But those that are in proximity to all those ideals intend to erase our individual differences and make us conform to unrealistic standards so that entire industries can then capitalize off of those constructed insecurities. That is capitalism in action. That is white supremacy in action, right? And the goal is, you know, many things, right? Like there's a demoralization that happens, a dehumanization that happens, so that we can take advantage of certain bodies and dominate certain bodies, right? But then there's also this component of diet culture and wellness culture that is an $80 billion industry that wants to make us feel insecure so that we keep buying their products. And people have kind of, you know, caught on, especially the younger generations, like Gen Z has caught on to the anti-diet movement, which is amazing. But then there's wellness culture. Wellness culture is so freaking sneaky because it guises things in the name of health, but it's the same thing with a different branding. it becomes this like moral superiority thing to be, you know, quote unquote healthy. And that's very messed up for many reasons, very ableist, because some people are just born with genetics that will never allow them to be the quote unquote healthy ideal. And that doesn't make anyone any less of a person. So anyways, there's the diet and wellness culture that makes a lot of money off of our insecurities, right? And then there's, you know, now there's this huge like skincare thing, a part of wellness culture, which is, you know, all this anti-aging stuff has become so popular. Everyone's talking about their skincare routines and retinol and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not like shaming anyone for using those products. I get it. Like, we are indoctrinated in this together. And how could we not want those things when we're told that's what we should want and what we should aim for? But it is part of a system, and it's important to understand what you're buying into and to understand where your values lie, so you can make an informed decision. Does this align with my values? Why or why not? And what decision do I want to make from there? Not just kind of blindly accepting whatever the culture tells us, right? Because all of these things are super harmful. Deep breaths. This gets me really fired up. So, traditional treatments for body image focus on helping people reject the pursuit of thinness. And this is great, right? Like, this is a major risk factor for disordered eating, but that alone is not enough. When we talk about treating body image, we need to acknowledge all the systems of oppression influencing all of the bodies that are marginalized in many different ways. So we all have this personal body image story. And it's the way we came to view our bodies from the time we were born, because we weren't born hating our bodies. We were born curious about our bodies. If you observe a baby, you'll see the baby kind of like feeling their feet and touching their skin and just like kind of curiously looking and approaching at their bodies. Like, hey, this thing is cool, right? They're not judging and criticizing our bodies. That's a learned behavior. That's a story in our psyche that is constructed and conditioned in part through cultural norms and expectations. It's heavily influenced by our politicized experiences in the world, because yes, our bodies are politicized. I don't care where you're at on the body hierarchy, it is 100% politicized. And that's how we come. That's one big macro way that we start to view our bodies, right? There's other things too, right? Experiences of trauma is another major way that we learn to perceive our bodies negatively. When it's not safe to be in our bodies, whether it's from systemic oppression, whether it's from other types of trauma, right? There's many ways we learn to hate our bodies, whether it's from having a chronic illness and the whole healthism movement. So there's many ways. But I want you to think of the ways that your body's been politicized, the ways you've experienced being othered, you know, by lack of representation of similar bodies, by violent acts of injustice towards people in bodies like yours, you know, by racism, sexism, heterosexism, ableism, ageism, anti-fat bias. There's so many ways. And these don't have to be macroaggressions, right? Those are awful and terrible and 100% influence how we see our bodies, but there's also microaggressions. Microaggressions are more subtle, you know, more subtle forms of othering. You know, an example would be like only dating people of a certain, you know, thin-sized body. Well, the microaggression there is obviously that thinner is better, and that if you're in a larger body, you're not as desirable, right? So there's micro and macro aggressions, and both are very impactful. You know, and I tend to think of microaggressions sometimes, I don't want to say worse because it's not about better or worse, but they are very insidious. They're hard to spot out. So it's kind of like gaslighting. It is gaslighting, because if you try to call it out, the person will be like, oh, I didn't mean that, right? And maybe they didn't mean that, but it is about impact, not intention. So my mixed race experience, I have like one really pertinent example of like a macroaggression And I'm privileged enough to say that, right? I haven't had like serious violent acts done to me for being mixed race, but I've had a whole host of microaggressions. You know, always, where are you from? As if I'm not even human. What are you? Being really exoticized for, you know, being racially ambiguous. All these things really taught me to like objectify my body and to feel like I don't belong. You know, I've worked a lot on that. I'm not in that space today, thankfully, but this was my experience growing up. And so these things impact you. And we internalize those experiences, whether they're direct or indirect. We're taught that our bodies are not good enough in so many ways. And for some, our bodies are even criminalized. You know, being a Black person in America, we don't need to elaborate on that for people to understand how real that is. And imagine if, you know, all the bodies like yours you're seeing in the news are being punished or brutalized. Like, imagine what that would do to you, right? So as an eating disorder survivor and therapist, I believe that body positivity is not attainable for everyone until there's justice, equal representation, trust, reparations, and safety for marginalized bodies. This is a true abolitionist movement, right? We have to abolish these old systems and create something new in order for people to feel more body positive, right? And that term, by the way, has been totally co-opted by diet culture and by people that it wasn't actually intended for, right? And that's a whole other podcast. But body positivity movement was first meant for fat Black women, right? So we need to hold space for all the ways in which bodies are being harmed in our society and fight for change, you know, fight for change by electing leaders and voting for policies that are humanitarianism aligned and social justice aligned, by learning about what is abolitionist work, what is decarcerating care, what would that mean for our world and the systems we live in? And what do we imagine a new world could be, right? Because we really do have to get rid of these systems to create something new. And I don't want this to sound hopeless. It's not like we can't start working towards that now. We definitely can. We need to dream of what that looks like, though. We need to have a vision, right? And there's so many people doing this work, so many incredible people. And I will link a lot of that in the show notes, because I am by no means the first person talking about this. So this starts with looking at our own varying degrees of privilege and how we might have been blind to others' experiences. It starts with looking inwards and asking, what can I be doing to impact change? How has my conditioned silence hurt others? If we are closer to the top of the hierarchy, right, we may not be aware of all these things yet. That's okay. It's not your fault. It is your job, though, to learn about that, right? If that's within your value system, I encourage you to do that. And if it's not within your value system, I encourage you to reflect on why. But if you're listening to my podcast, I'm assuming it is a part of your values. So explore the ways your privilege or your silence may have hurt others. Maybe times when there's been micro or macro aggressions and it's just been easier or more comfortable to turn away, right? That hurts people, that hurts bodies. And I know that wasn't your intention. Again, if you're listening to this podcast, I am sure you have the biggest heart and too much empathy, right? Not that there could really be too much, but people that struggle with disordered eating tend to have the biggest hearts, right? And this isn't about shaming people. This is about, how can we do better, though, right? How can we explore the ways in which our bodies have been impacted by this and others? Because that's what it starts with. It starts with us doing our own work. And on the personal front, not all hope is lost. Just because body positivity won't feel attainable to most people, and even if those systems never fully change in our lifetimes, there is still hope. You know, what I've seen accomplished by others and myself is more along the lines of body neutrality, body acceptance, body kindness, body trust, and body respect. I don't have to like the way I look all the time or at all. But I need to know that, that's something that's created. It's not my body's problem, and it's not your body's problem. The problem is with the world. But if I can come to a place of neutrality and acceptance for my body, then I'm more likely to treat it with respect and kindness. And that is the start of fighting back against these systems, because remember, the systems want the opposite of that. So you don't have to love the way your body looks. In fact, there's a lot of research that shows even when, you know, we think loving how we look is attainable, we still have an appearance-focused outlook on our lives. And the reality is your appearance is not the most important thing about you. What is important is that you can trust your body, you can treat it with kindness and respect, even if others don't. Your body is your home, it's no one else's. Your body is your longest relationship. And just like any relationship, it's going to require daily work to remind it that it can trust you and you can trust it. It's not just something that we reach a place of body acceptance and then we're good forever. No, that's a daily thing. Even for myself, I've been recovered for many years. There's still moments where I don't feel awesome or I don't even like my body, but I do the work to get back to a place of neutrality and treating it with care. So I want to leave you with some tips that you can use to practice working towards neutrality, okay? And again, this is part of this work. Part of dismantling these systems is starting with ourselves, right? So ways to start working on body neutrality. Number one, we have to start treating our bodies with respect. We have to start listening to our body. If you're feeling tired, don't keep working on that assignment, or don't, you know, do another few hours of work in the evening. Prioritize your rest. Prioritize sleep. Take naps. If you go back in my podcast episodes, I have a whole episode on why rest is a body justice practice. We need to get that proper nourishment from rest, from food. Move in ways that feel good, not punishing, if you're in a place in recovery where that's possible and safe for you. And I don't mean full-on formal exercise. I mean just like stretching, walking in nature. Those are things that our body loves, right? And there's privilege in that too. Not everyone can do that. Continue choosing the path of recovery when it comes to healing from your eating disorder, trauma, or addiction. Whatever it is you're recovering from, recovery connects you back to your true self and to your body. And those oppressive hierarchies of society take us away, right? Take us away from our body. Recovery can take you back home. Develop some appreciation for your body. This can take time, but really focus on the things your body can do for you instead of what it looks like. You know, your body is really just the instrument for your life. It is not an ornament. That is a quote by, oh gosh, I'm gonna forget their names, but I will put them in the show notes. But Leslie, oh, I forget her last name. But there's two sisters that write the book More Than a Body, and I highly recommend that book. I will link that in the show notes though. And when you have that list of appreciation, like, oh, I'm so thankful for my arms. They allow me to hug my partner, pet my dog. Put those reminders all over your mirror. We have to start reconditioning the way we think about ourselves. So all those automatic negative thoughts we have about our body, again, those are conditioned, but we can recondition ourselves to think about function and not appearance. I also really recommend developing a self-care routine. This is a really big part of developing body respect and trust. You have to show yourself that you matter, and it doesn't come from logic or my words or your words. It comes from action. So doing really small acts of kindness for yourself, building self-compassion into your life, putting your needs first, setting boundaries. And really watch how this transforms the way you talk to yourself and your body, because this was a game changer for me. And it's not something that you implement in a week and see the difference. This is like years, right? years of repetition of putting your needs first and taking care of you. I also really recommend unfollowing triggering social media accounts. So any accounts, you know, that are like Fitspo, Thinspo, or any appearance-focused accounts that always make you feel less than or make you feel lacking, we can unfollow that stuff or delete it. There's a lot of research that shows that when we follow accounts with more body diversity, we become more accepting of ourselves. And seeing only one ideal represented to us is a major risk factor for body image distress. So unfollow those triggering accounts, curate a social media feed that has body diversity with all different sizes, shapes, abilities, colors, gender identities. You know, we can change how the algorithm and what the algorithm shows us, but it does start with us. My last piece of advice, if you are struggling with an eating disorder or body image, definitely seek out a specialist to help you walk through this process. If you can afford it, an eating disorder or body image therapist that is specialized, no one heals alone. That's something that comes from a very individualistic, capitalistic, pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality. We are not meant to heal alone. We heal in community, right? And so seeking out support, whether that's from a therapist, a non-traditional, actually I should say traditional, indigenous type of healing, that is the traditional form of healing, a dietitian who specializes in eating disorders and body image, support groups, other people that are doing this journey. No one heals alone though. So whatever it is, finding that support. These things are so embedded into our personal and collective psyches. So it's really important to have support to help unlearn this stuff. And again, if you can afford a licensed therapist that specializes in eating disorders and has a social justice and trauma-informed approach, highly recommend. Books and podcasts that talk about this stuff is also so helpful. If you cannot access therapy, which I understand is a complete privilege, I would recommend looking into all the books that I will link in the show notes and creators that talk about this stuff too, which I will definitely list in the show notes. So remember, we're fighting a war that is systemic in nature. It's going to take a force much larger than ourselves to fix this problem, right? So it's not something we can do alone. We need help, we need support, we need to recondition ourselves. I hope this was eye-opening for you guys, and I hope that you bared with me through it. I want to note that I do say this from a place of light-skinned, mixed-raced, cisgender, thin, able-bodied privilege. I will never fully understand what it's like to walk in the shoes of those more marginalized than myself, and I acknowledge that. And I'm here to do this work with you all. So I hope this was helpful. If you head over to my Instagram at Body Justice Therapist and you go to the link in my bio, you can find more info about me, my website, how to become a client. I've got Eating Disorder Recovery online course that is self-paced and is a great adjunct to therapy to help you build skills for your recovery. It also has a chapter on social justice and eating disorder recovery, which really makes the course different from other courses out there. And the reason why I created it in the first place was so that people could access this kind of information if they can't afford a therapist. So it's an affordable price point, and my mission is to make it accessible to all. So please DM me or message me or email me if you need a discount code. I really do want it to be accessible. And I hope I gave you guys some things to think about. Please leave me a review on Apple. It helps this podcast get to more people. And I'm just giving you all a big virtual hug. I'm thinking of you, and I hope the new year brings you peace. I hope it brings us all peace because we could all use that.